We had free education, we had free hospitals,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We supported our elderly. We've got TB back in this country, we've got whooping cough, we've got measles. Where the hell is the money going?
What is it about the New Zealand voice that makes it so distinctive? Because it is full of character and colour, and this changes as you move about the regions of New Zealand. In this series, we'll be travelling to the four corners of both islands and as far south as Stewart Island, listening to the stories and the voices of third-generation people in each area, people generally in their 70s and 80s. Today, we're in Hokitika and Woodstock on the South Island's west coast, talking with a bunch of dinkum pearlers.
Farewell to the gold that never I found. Goodbye to the nuggets that somewhere abound. And it's only when dreaming that I see it gleaming down in the dark deep underground.
Well, our grandfather, he told us where there was a place that he knew was quite good gold. And it was good gold, very good gold. Once you're gold mining, it's a fever.
Were you keen to go gold mining yourself?
I was, oh yes.
Yeah, it's in the blood.
That's right, oh yes.
So then what was your next job?
The Remu dredge.
That was a gold dredge.
Gold dredge, yeah, the Remu, yes. Gold dredge. Yeah, but you could tell where there was good gold. There was what they call layers of wash. You'd get a layer of, say, brown wash, you'd get a layer of blue wash, you'd get a layer of Brighton wash.
Brighton wash?
Brighton, yeah, that was a reddy coloured.
Yeah.
The blue wash carried more gold than anything.
Farewell to the gold that never I found. Goodbye to the nuggets that somewhere.
Gold it was that lured many of the ancestors of these third-generation coasters to Hokitika in the 1860s. Their grandparents came here, or nearabouts, from southern England, Ireland, Scotland, Germany and Australia. Music and storytelling are in the blood of these people. They'll talk about hard times, fun times, West Coast pubs and policemen, forestry scandals, but some of their greatest yarns are about accidents.
My dad, he was a chopper, and quite a good one at that. And he always had a very sharp axe. And of course, when he left home or go anywhere, he always put that axe well and truly into a log. So he thought, well, you know, keep these kids from getting at it. And Mum had been to Greymouth, and to buy me a nice pair of new boots. Well, it gets home and I has these boots on, and really, you know, they made a big difference as far as I was concerned. I chopped a lot of wood and that sort of thing. And I picked up a saw that was there, and Dad had a saw contraption to hold the wood so that you didn't have to bend down too low. And I was putting my foot out on this block like this with these new boots, and I was sawing away at this thing, and my sister came along and she grabbed hold of this axe. How she got it out, I don't know, but she pulled it out of the block and dropped it on my toe. And believe it or not, cut the boot right through, and my toe was just a skin. When I took off my shoe, the end of my toe just fell over like that. It was just hanging on by the skin. And I ran inside to Mum and I said to her, she used to say to me, now, be careful, you kids out there, you'll cut your toes off. She was always telling us this. And I ran in and I said, Mum, it's off at last. She said, what's off at last? I said, my toe. And she looked down, oh. So she hauled off my shoe and she grabbed hold of this toe that was still fallen over. She picked it up and pushed it onto the end of my toe, wrapped it up tight. And although she'd just come home from Greymouth, she had to set out and walk back with me in her arms, screaming my head off.
How many miles?
Well, you know, out from South Beach out there, it's quite a distance, be a couple of 3 miles, I suppose, 2.5 miles anyway. So along come a butcher, Mr. Bruin, Archie Bruin. And he gets Mum and me and Claire up in the cart at all. And he got into the doctor. And Dr. McBrady was a little short man. And he had wrinkles of fat around his neck like a Berkshire sow, you know?
Down on the farm, I was knocked out with lightning. I was making toast for the children. I only had 3 children at the time. And it was at the stove, of course, and we had a Whistler kettle, and I had my hand on the kettle that was sitting on the stove. And it was a wet morning, and I never saw the lightning nor heard the thunder. I felt this dreadful jolt on my shoulder. Evidently it spun me around and I was on the floor. So one of the children dived to the shed for Dad. But I don't remember anything of that. I can remember coming to on the couch in the kitchen and this dreadful pins and needles from my shoulder right down to my arm and nearly drove me up the wall. But anyway, I didn't get to the doctor till the next day. Mm-hmm. I was all right, but I hadn't lost the use of it. So I came up to the doctor and I went to him and I said, oh, I've been struck by lightning and I was making toast at the stove. Oh, yes, it'd be from the electricity. I said, oh, we haven't got any electricity up the valley yet. Well, he said, you've been very, very lucky. He said the water in the kettle and the water to the cylinder in the way had anchored, grounded the there. He said, you're lucky you haven't got the palm of your hands blown out. So that was that. But a long time after that, every time there was a thunder and lightning, I always went and hid up the passage so as not to frighten the children.
Well, we used to go to school with trousers. They used to call them bullseyes with patches in the backside.
Bullseyes because people would shanghai you.
Yeah. Yeah, the jerseys and that we wore were all dined up with wool, like it was all skeins of wool in those days. Mm. But, it was hard times. See, when you think of it now, you'd wonder how the parents brought up 8 or 10 children. Like, they were only getting about £2 a day, my father working, and that, I don't know. Things were cheap, mind you.
When I was small, Mum had her horse and Dad used to have his horse and I always went with Dad on his horse. But Mum was, she always had the baby. But we used to go for rides. And boarding the rivers used to be one of my fears. It was all this white water running underneath the horse's stomach. I could never forget that.
Did you sometimes have to, the horses sometimes have to swim the rivers?
Yes, yes.
This was where, between where and where?
Usually at the Krangra was the one we sort of crossed a lot, and the Jacobs River.
Oh, well, we made palalas, as we called it. We used to make them every few days and to wear to school because we had no shoes to wear, and on the frosty mornings we'd have these palalas, but when they sort of dried out, they open up.
Yeah.
So we had to make more.
More. Were they made from a double thickness of fat?
No, from the single layer of flax.
Was the hall all decorated up?
Oh, yes, they used to decorate them up with bungies and all sorts of ferns and all sorts of things. Of course, you know, there's a certain amount of vermin in these things, and you'd hear a scream now and again, and sort of typo crawl out or something like that. But that's all in the nice fun, you know. But then they used to have a foxtrot, one step, Boston two step, Maxina, and all those short Alberts.
What is a short Albert?
Short Alberts. Well, these Alberts are like you form circles, like, you know, four people.
Yeah, a bit like a square dance.
Yes, it's a square dance. There's four people there. There's tops and bottoms. Top righty and bottom just swing in the centre, lead through corners all and circles. Swing your partners. You don't, and keep the ladies on their feet. And then they have polka mazurka.
Polka mazurka.
Down, 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 down,
remember when the first wireless we got, that would be 1935, 36, and it was a big event. There was only two in Woodstock, and now the wireless was a big thing, a big event for us. And we knew all the parliamentarians from Semple to Webb.
You can remember hearing Semple?
Oh, yes. He was a great debater, he could speak on anything. Mostly he was for the poor man. He was a good unionist. They all were good unionists. Mm. Of course, they had their early teachings on the West Coast. Simple, Webb. They worked in the mines at Westport and outside Greymouth.
We've also got older men of the forestry department, which is all broken down now. Some embittered, some frustrated because their life skills are no longer able to be used. These men were quite used to training. Often a boy left school and he would go into the bush gang. It took just as long for him to be a proficient bushman, safe with all the equipment, safe in knowing where a tree would fall when you cut it this way or that way. Those men would guide him through. He might be full of fun and nonsense, but if there was any danger in it, a heavy hand would land on his shoulder and someone would say, "Hi, laddie, if you do that, you'll..." It took just as long to train that boy to come up to be foreman of that bush gang as it does to get a degree in forestry. But could that man with the degree safely be in charge of that bush gang? I don't think he could. And therefore, their value is the same. When I worked for the park, one of the roadmen came in one day. He was a local man, and he came in, a man of few words of Scandinavian descent. And he said, "If you don't do something about that Bee Creek on the Glacier Road, you're going to have trouble." Nobody bothered to look up much, and he just walked out. Now, a week before, we'd had Dr. Wardle, who did the botanical survey of Western National Park, and it was a wet day, and he was wandering around, and several of the rangers were standing around, and he was talking about botanical things and so forth, and the possum damage and so forth, and now and again he used botanical terms, and someone would say, "Oh, hang on a minute, you know, what do we call it?" And they hung on every word. And I said, "Look, the man who's just walked out has got just as much knowledge in his field as Dr. Wardle's got in his." I said, "You didn't ask him what creek." I said, "If you've got any sense at all, you'll run after that man and you'll bring him back in here and ask him. Because if you don't, you will have bee trouble with that creek." And that's what we're doing now. We've got these young ladies who do that. They are practical men and could be... We're wasting them. I just feel now that even our tourism has become gimmicky. We're not sharing something we love anymore. Mm. We're taking people around for money's sake.
Policemen hold a special place in the hearts of coasters. Many tales are told of the popular Constable Drummond, but his daughter, Jean Cook, recalls a more chilling incident.
This bill went from Canary to Lake Canary, almost Lake Canary, Milltown, which is not far away. Walked early in the morning, pinched a rifle out of this hut, walked back to Canary, and must have got back there, I would say, about probably 2:30 or 3 o'clock, and went next door to the police station, to the Catholic school ground, and lay down out the back there somewhere near the toilets, and trained this gun on Dad's paddock because he knew ultimately Dad would come out and milk his cow, you see. And so these boys said to him, "What are you doing, Bill?" "Oh, I'm going to shoot Mr. Drummond when he comes out to milk his cow." Well, these kids, they went back. Whether they told the Sisters of Mercy, I don't know. But they went down the street and we rushed into the baker's shop to Mrs. Fallot. And they said, "Mrs. Fallot, Bill Singer's up there in our playground waiting with a rifle to shoot Mr. Drummond." "Oh," she said, "is he? All right, boys, I'll just go and ring Mrs. Drummond up." So she duly went in and told Mum, and Mum said, "Oh, is that right?" She said, "Don't let him go out, Mrs. Drummond. Now, I'm telling you, don't let him go out, because he'll shoot him." So Mum told Dad, and Dad said, "Oh, a lot of rubbish," Rabie say. I could just imagine. But he must have climbed up to a fanlight or something, and he could see him. So then he rang the police in Hakateka, and two of his cobbers came out. And he was so engrossed in watching and waiting for Dad that they crept up through the goss and things and grabbed him before he knew they were there and took the gun off him. Well, he was locked up for quite a while after that, of course. In those days, they kill them now like as if they're just flies, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
But that was a day I never forgot either.
Constable Drummond was well known by Jim Keenan's family, who ran the pub at Woodstock, the Royal Mail. But Mrs. Keenan, Jim's mother, seldom needed Constable Drummond's help. She had a novel way of dealing with drunks.
One of the things we learnt at the hotel was that if there wasn't a lot of it, but the drunkenness that was there was abhorrent, and we were always told, you never want to get like that. And my mother had a name when she was widowed. Some of the young bloods would come out, or when I say young bloods, they were, in their 20s. If they came out and my mother felt that they had had enough drink, or more than they should have, she would take them down and get them to have a bowl of her lovely soup and order a taxi for them and shoot them back to Hakateka, because she wouldn't serve. It was against her style.
That family style persists in the Royal Mail pub today. As soon as you enter, you're welcomed and swept into whatever debate is raging.
Right. And look what Sir Tristan's done to this country. What did Farlap do to this country? What did Delray do to this country? What did Ruffy do to this country, which is called Rough Habit? What did Cardigan Bay do to this country to become the first trotter to ever earn $1 million in America? We've got it. Let us breed them. Let us run them. Let us prove to the rest of the world that we've got everything.
Listening to these lively voices, you'll have noticed a few unusual West Coast words. Goss for gorse, bungies for punga, typer for wetter. And of course, down the coast you don't say goodbye or hooray, it's Uru. We'll talk about these regional words later in the series. Oh, and if you're wondering about our title, Dinkum Pearlers, to pearl, P-U-R-L, is to embroider with gold or silver, so a pearler is something or someone exceptionally fine. Dinkum is a Lincolnshire word that's been used in New Zealand since the 1890s. I'm Dinah Priestley on the West Coast with a group of Dinkum Pearlers. Uru.
Farewell to the gold that never I found. Goodbye to the nuggets that somewhere abound. And it's only when dreaming that I see it gleaming down in the dark deep underground.
In this West Coast episode of Dinkum Pearlers, celebrating the spirit and the voice of older New Zealanders, you've heard the voices of Ron and Alan Wells, Ernie Cook, Thora Chin, Henry Grocott, Iris Climo, Jane Wilson, Dorothy Fletcher, Jean Cook, Diane Howe, and Jim Keenan. Martin Curtis sang Farewell to the Gold, and Marcus and Linus Turner played Sonny's Mazurka. Dinkum Pearlers was recorded and produced for National Radio by me, Dinah Priestley, with technical assistance from Gareth Watkins. Our thanks to the Oral History Centre of the Alexander Turnbull Library and to the New Zealand Lotteries Commission for their generous assistance.